Madam Chair, it's 9 o'clock and AGP is broadcasting and recording.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the March 25, 2021 Delta Stewardship Council meeting. I'm Susan Tatayan, Chair of the Council. Let's get rolling with a roll call, starting with Maria Maranian.
Maranian here.
Don Natoli.
Don Natoli here.
Christy Smith.
Christy Smith here.
Susan Tatayan here, and Daniel Zingale.
Good morning, I'm here.
Great, and we have a quorum. That takes us to just a little bit of housekeeping. If any member of the public is interested in providing public comment, please send an email blue card to the clerk at engage@deltacouncil.ca.gov as seen on the screen. Be sure to note your name and the agenda item that you wish to comment on. Also, please note if you wish to speak or would like the clerk to read your comment. And when your name is called, the clerk will unmute you or read your comment if requested. On to agenda item three. We are about to go into closed session, and I anticipate closed session will run about 45 minutes long. So we'll return around 9:45. See you all then. Hey, Maria.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, AGP, I think we are ready to return to live.
Okay, Madam Chair, we are broadcasting and recording.
Great, thank you. The council has returned from closed session. No action was taken during closed session. Council members, let's reestablish a quorum with a roll call, starting with Maria Maranian.
Maria Maranian here.
Don Natoli.
Don Natoli here.
Christy Smith. I see you, Christy. I think you're still on mute.
My apologies. I am here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Susan Tatayan here and Daniel Zingale.
Zingale here.
Okay. Quorum is reestablished. As a reminder to the public participating today, if any member of the public is interested in providing public comment, please send an email blue card to the clerk at engage@deltacouncil.ca.gov as seen on the screen. Be sure to note your name in the agenda item that you wish to comment on, and please note if you wish to speak or would like the clerk to read your comment. And when your name is called, the clerk will unmute your line or read your comment for you if you have requested. So on to agenda item six, the consent calendar. Council members, I'm assuming everyone has had a chance to review all items on the consent calendar.
Mm-hmm. And,
Maria Maranian moves approval.
Second.
Christy Smith seconds that motion. Is there any public comment on this item?
Public comment on this item.
Okay, no public comment. Council members, is there any need for any discussion on any of the items on the consent calendar? Are there any objections? Okay, hearing none, the motion is adopted by unanimous consent. So on to agenda item 7, the chair's report. For the chair's report this morning, we'll have Amanda Bowl, our special assistant for planning and science, give us a recount of the Delta Plan Interagency Implementation Committee meeting.
Great.
Good morning, thank Amanda.
You. Good morning. Thank you, Chair Tatayan, and good morning, council members. I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to highlight kind of the key takeaways from the March 15th DPIC meeting, which was just a week ago Monday. The meeting focused on nature-based adaptation with a panel moderated by Andrew Schwartz and featured Letitia Grenier from the San Francisco Estuary Partnership discussing the Delta Landscape Scenario Planning Tool, which you all heard about, I believe, last month. We also had River Partners President Julie Rentner discussing floodplain solutions in the South Delta, and then California Department of Food and Ag Science Advisor Amrith Gunasekera presenting what was learned during recent California Department of Food and Ag hosted farmer and rancher listening sessions. The committee discussion following the panel focused on how Delta Adapt can link to and collaborate with planning efforts underway by DPIC agencies. Nancy Vogel, representing the Resources Agency, acknowledged the important role that Delta Adapt is to planning, not just for the Delta in terms of adaptation, but also in informing other climate adaptation planning efforts in the state. There was also much support for the council-funded Delta Landscape Scenario Planning Tool and a lot of interest over the long term in really seeing how the tool can help in scenario planning in the Bay and the upper watershed, acknowledging the role that adaptation measures outside of the Delta play on our adaptation measures inside the Delta. DPIC also received a report out on the science needs assessment. Delta Independent Science Board members, Dr. Steve Brandt and Dr. Jay Lund, presented the scientific focus of the scientific needs assessment, which is on long-term forecasting capacity, and asked DPIC members to contribute staff to an interagency task force to help refine the final recommendations that'll go to DPIC in July. And DPIC agreed to assist in this, continue assisting in this way, in this effort. And so we are now in the process of convening this task force and look forward to finalizing the science needs assessment to submit to DPIC in July. And I expect probably at the June or July council meeting will also provide you an update on just what is contained in the science needs assessment as well. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from council members? And is there any public comment on this item?
Yes, I believe there is one public comment. Looks like Tom Williams would like to speak, so I'm going to allow him one second. Hi, Tom. You should be able to unmute yourself now if you have a comment.
Hello, hi, Dr. Tom Williams, Sierra Club Water Committee, speaking from Los Angeles. We're quite concerned regarding the Delta Tunnel. I've built tunnels before, especially in mucky ground such as then Shanghai. However, the basic element that I tripped over when going through previous documents regarding the Delta Tunnels is the flow. Where will they get the flow to feed the 6,000 cubic feet per second? And the basic element that I found was flood flow, that they would only take flood flow. I would like to know if there's a agency or if there's an individual or a web link that I could talk directly to regarding drought, climate change, and the flood flows that would be anticipated that would be acceptable to the Delta Tunnel. That's all. That's finished.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Dr. Williams.
Dr. Williams, excuse me. I'll turn to our executive officer. I'm not sure that we can give you a name of an agency to address your question right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dr. Williams, if you could leave your contact information, we can follow up and provide you with the agencies that are directly making decisions on the issues that you raised. Would that be helpful?
Yes, it would be. But there's no place to put chat or Q&A on your Zoom page.
You can email us so, at hello@deltacouncil.ca.gov.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Okay, is there any other public comment on this item?
There is no other public comment.
Great. Well, in that case, I'll say thank you to Amanda for an excellent report out. And now we will turn to agenda item 8, the executive officer's report.
Great, good morning, thank you. I'll start with our regular announcement regarding operations during the pandemic. Staff continue to work remotely, but are available to assist the public. Our public meeting formats continue to be fully remote per state guidance. And if anyone needs to contact staff at the council, again, you are encouraged to email hello@deltacouncil.ca.gov to be directed to the appropriate staff person who can respond to your questions. Anyone interested in following along with our public meetings or events should sign up for our email listserv or check our website where we frequently post information and updates about those events and also participation information. This month, the council sent one letter regarding Delta Plan implementation and coordination. The letter was to San Joaquin County regarding proposed amendments to their county development title on agricultural mitigation. This is a follow-up to a letter that we sent to the county in May 2020 on these amendments. Our letter reiterates the council's concern that language in the amendment would not provide assurances that easements would be permanent, potentially putting that guidance from the county in conflict with requirements in the Delta Plan. The letter highlights interactions between the county and council staff regarding the proposed amendments and requests that the county make clarifying changes before adoption by the Board of Supervisors. Staff reported to me yesterday that based on our letter, as well as input from the Delta Protection Commission, the Department of Conservation, and the American Farmland Trust, the Board of Supervisors did request that staff rework the ordinance and bring back revisions on this point. But we will keep you apprised of any further developments on this matter. It's been a busy season for Delta Plan covered action certifications. Last month, I reported that 4 covered action certifications had been submitted, so I can now provide a quick update. For 3 projects, the Central Valley Flood Protection Board's American River Common Features Left Bank Protection Project, the Department of Water Resources Bradmore Island and Arnold Slough Tidal Habitat Restoration Project, and the Brannan Andrus Levee Maintenance District Sacramento River Erosion Control and Habitat Enhancement Project. For those 3 projects, no appeals were received and they can move forward. The Department of Water Resources also submitted a certification of consistency on February 22nd. This is for the Lookout Slough Tidal Habitat Restoration and Flood Improvement Project. The project's public review and appeal period closed yesterday, March 24th, and the council has received 4 appeals from Liberty Island Access, Solano County Water Agency, Reclamation Districts 2060 and 2068, and Central Delta Water Agency. Staff is now reviewing the appeals for completeness and will issue notices shortly that initiate the appeals process for this covered action. The council's statutory deadline to set a hearing is within 60 days of an appeals filing, and then 60 after the hearing to issue a determination. Scheduled hearing dates are forthcoming and will be noticed through the council's website and listserv. Vera Bezdacek, our legal counsel, will provide ex parte communications prohibition information during the update. So we will continue to keep the council updated on these certifications and on our website. Our website is a resource for interested parties to review documents related to appeals and covered action certifications and learn more about our process. If you have any questions, please let me know or contact our staff at the hello@deltacouncil.com address. I have a few personnel announcements to share. First, sad for us, but glad for her, our chief counsel, Bethany Payne, accepted a new position as an administrative law judge with the California Unemployment Insurance Appeals Board. So we wish Bethany well in her future endeavors and we'll miss working with her. Vera Bezdacek with us today has graciously agreed to serve as acting chief counsel. I'm pleased to announce that Avery Livengood has been promoted to Environmental Program Manager 1. In this role, Avery will lead the regulatory review unit in the planning division, which is responsible for management and administration of the council's covered action, certification, and appeals processes. Avery will continue to lead and contribute to many of our long-range planning projects, including the Delta Plan Ecosystem Amendment, our Delta Adapts climate work, and the environmental justice issue paper. Finally, Jenica Moffitt joins the Delta Science Program's Science-Based Adaptive Management Unit as their 2021 Sea Grant Fellow. There, she will assist with projects supporting adaptive management of the Delta, climate-resilient restoration projects, and synthesis reports with the Delta Independent Science Board. Jenica recently earned her master's degree in biology with a focus in ecology and evolution from Cal State Northridge. Every month, we include in your packet an outreach highlights report and an active projects list, so you have an idea of the variety of ongoing projects in the planning phase in the Delta that staff are tracking. I want to take just a moment to call out the highlights report. Each month, our communications team collects and analyzes performance metrics related to our digital outreach. They use these metrics then to create an analytics report. This report in your packet and also available on our website summarizes social media activity, website activity, our listserv and data trends and spotlights some key takeaways from that data. So these reports are provided to you monthly with the idea that, or actually at the request of the council some months ago, so that you have a better idea of who's tuning in, who's using our products and what our reach is, whether it's growing, et cetera. In addition to keeping us apprised of the latest goings on, these allow our communications team to then strategically and adaptively implement our communication strategy for the council based on how and where our community is seeking information about our mission and our activities. So in general, these reports are showing that the council's presence continues to grow across all of its platforms. For example, in February, we had over 12,000 profile visits on Twitter. We brought in more than 10,000 page views on our website. And on one individual Women in Science post on Instagram, as an example, we had 57 likes and 18 comments. So it just gives you an idea of the type of engagement that we're receiving across our social media and digital platforms. And I'm supposed to tell you that the communications team virtual door is always open for any questions or feedback on that report. I think at this point, I'm gonna turn to Vera and ask her to provide the legal update.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Vera Bezdicek, and just to let you know, I've been with the council for some time now. I'm normally an attorney four with the department. And currently, as Jessica mentioned, I'm in the role of acting chief counsel. I wanted to give you an ex parte reminder today because we are in ex parte communications restrictions now because of the appeals that have been filed for the Lookout Slough project. The council's administrative procedures regarding appeals require that I remind you of the ex parte communication restriction at this meeting. The ex parte communication restriction is a requirement of California's Administrative Procedure Act and the council's appeals procedures. It prohibits any communication, direct or indirect, regarding any issue in the proceeding to the council or council members from an employee or representative of an agency that is a party, or from an interested person outside the agency, without notice and opportunity for all parties to participate in the communication. What that means here is that the council members and council staff cannot and should not communicate about or discuss the Lookout Slough tidal habitat restoration and flood improvement project or the council's appeal proceedings with any person outside of the council. The only exception is communications regarding the administrative or procedural status of the proceedings. We have established a special email address to receive those types of communications, and the email address is lookoutsloughcert@deltacouncil.ca.gov. I strongly recommend that if you find yourself anywhere that Lookout Slough and or the council's appeals proceedings become a topic of conversation, that you please excuse yourself from the meeting and immediately by explaining that you are under ex parte communication prohibition and cannot discuss or hear any extra record information about the project. If you receive a request from someone other than a council employee to discuss the Lookout Slough tidal habitat restoration and flood improvement project, please decline that request and make Executive Officer Jessica Pearson and me aware of that request so that we can handle it appropriately. Any ex parte communications will be shared with the parties via our service list and will be posted on the Council's Lookout Slough Restoration Project website as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have regarding the ex parte restrictions that we are now under.
Thank you, Vera. So just to clarify, that's Lookout Slough, LookoutSlough, CERT, CERT, at Delta Council for that email address.
Thank you.
And I'll make sure we get that posted on our website as well. Okay. Hearing no questions, thank you very much. Okay, and to wrap up my executive officer's report, I'll just highlight what's on the remainder of our agenda. Of course, we've got regular business, but then also we have two important updates. One is on the 2022 Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. We're going to hear an update on the development of that plan and discuss its connection to the Delta Plan and the work of the council. After that, we'll hear about the Recreation and Tourism Chapter 2020 update to the Economic Sustainability Plan for the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and that's from the Delta Protection Commission. With that, Chair Tatayan, I conclude my executive officer's report. Happy to take any questions.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Jessica. Council members, do you have questions for Jessica? Hearing none, is there any public comment on this item?
There is no public comment on this item.
Thanks, Brandon. Then let's move on to agenda item 9, the lead scientist report with Dr. Laurel Larson.
Thank you, Chair Tatayan, and good morning, council members. Today in my lead scientist report, I'm going to start out by spotlighting an article that is of great relevance to our work here at the council. And then I'll go on to report on ongoing and upcoming Delta Science program activities. So just to start out with the article spotlight, I'm gonna ground this spotlight with the statement that precipitation totals for this water year are now hovering at just around 50% of typical cumulative precipitation received by this time of year. You can see some more details in your by the numbers handout. But it seems that the word lingering on everyone's tongue these days is drought. Especially after the last drought, there's been a lot of interest in using climate models to look ahead to see what the future might have in store for water delivery to California. For example, in-house, the Climate Change Vulnerability Assessment uses a suite of climate models that have historically performed well for California in order to develop its projections for the future. But precipitation totals are just one part of the water manager's concern with changing climate. The climate change models used to project these future scenarios also suggest that even during normal years, in which the wet season delivers an average amount of precipitation, that precipitation will fall during a shorter amount of time, such that the rainy season is shorter and sharper. So why is this a concern? Well, a delayed onset to the rainy season means that vegetation has a longer amount of time to become dry and crispy, and that this extended period of time over which flammable vegetation conditions develop will more regularly overlap with the off-slope Santa Ana or Diablo winds that typically occur in late fall. As you know, these two ingredients often mean massive wildfires occurring at a time when federal firefighting forces are often naturally low in capacity. The paper that I'm covering today, written by Yelena Lukovic as an outcome of work that she completed as a visiting scholar at Berkeley, shows that these shifts in the start of the rainy season in California that have been projected by these climate models are already occurring. And I want to just thank Byron Riggins for preparing the graphic that you're looking at now. He's our state policy fellow. So Yelena Lukovic's work examined time series of precipitation throughout the state of California over the past six decades and found that since the 1960s, the rainy season has been delayed by nearly a full month, 27 days on average. Most of this loss in early season precipitation comes out of November. Smaller relative decreases were seen in September and October. So for all practical purposes, the rainy season now starts in earnest in December instead of November as in former years. Furthermore, the peak is indeed sharper, with a lack of early season precipitation being compensated for by slight increases in winter precipitation. Now, this is a phenomenon that's pervasive across the whole state, according to the findings of this paper, and is due to an extension of summer-like atmospheric conditions into October and November, which steer mid-latitude storm tracks away from California and to the north. Importantly, these observations are consistent with the climate models, which builds further confidence in their projections and planning, like the Delta Adapts Vulnerability Assessment. Now, these observations also have important implications for Delta science and management. For one, with a delayed onset to the rainy season being the new normal, we're also looking at extreme wildfires being the new normal, and we need to understand what the implications will be for water quality and quantity within the Delta. Extreme wildfire behavior would be further exacerbated by the sharpening of the peak, as higher precipitation during the peak rainy season could translate into more abundant vegetation growth. Now, related to the delayed onset of the rainy season, in a commentary about the article that was also published in Geophysical Research Letters by Daniel Swain, Dr. Swain wrote that even though former early fall precipitation would have been just 2 to 5% of the annual total, even that small an increment received prior to the onset of the offshore winds was historically sufficient to dampen the fire season substantially and reduce the fire fanning potential of those winds. Loss of that early season precipitation, however, really does push us into a new regime with respect to fire. Swain continued, citing a study by Goss et al. In 2020 that showed extreme autumn fire behavior in California has more than doubled since the late 1970s, which is primarily attributable to increased vegetation flammability rather than to shifts in the offshore wind patterns. The second, the altered timing of the rainy season has important impacts on fish species, such as the endangered winter run Chinook salmon. The migration of winter run Chinook into the Delta for spawning coincides with the first major wet season flows. And with later migration resulting from later flows, we can expect altered food web dynamics, as well as altered endangered species act triggered constraints on flow diversions. And this doesn't even begin to broach the topic of upstream reservoir operations being based on historic precipitation patterns that do not reflect the current reality. Now, these reports really underscore the important role that the Council can play in funding original research on how these new normals, in many respects, are going to shape the resources that we manage. We really are entering uncharted territory and having the ability to respond rapidly to developing conditions such as drought or excessive wildfire seasons, as the ISB has also called for, is critical. This is a nice point to segue into discussion of where we stand with our ongoing proposal solicitation process, but I do want to pause for a moment here to see if there are any questions about the precipitation synthesis study.
I have one. This is Maria. The finding, the most important finding here is basically the shorter and sharper, correct?
That's correct.
But yeah. Because and it's even noticeable even this year that it was a very short period and it was a lot of rain, and you know, I could think that. Yeah.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, this is something that people like Dr. Daniel Swain have talked about for a long time, because we see this in the climate models that do a good job for California. But this study that just came out is important because it actually shows that this isn't something that's going to be happening in the future. It's already happening now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Don Natale. He's had a question for Laurel. Laurel, hey, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the report. In your presentation, you touched that it really doesn't even get into, you know, certainly a very large related issue, obviously, the operation of the storage system and reservoir operation and so forth. But is this information being shared? Obviously, it's published and so forth, but with folks that, you know, and whether it's Department of Water Resources or others, it relates to operations, because again, what little familiarity I have, you know, relative to flood protection, water storage, recreation. I mean, there are adopted manuals for operating the system, but if your point you just said a moment ago, if this is here and now, and obviously we've looked at over a period over six decades back to the early 60s, how is this being shared with folks? Again, this is, I think an important piece of information, and maybe it's intuitive to folks that, you know, as Maria just said, that, you know, they're, you can sense the changes, but now we've gone back and tracked it. And how does this information then get disseminated and hopefully get at least incorporated to people's thinking about, you know, what we might do about it from the standpoint of, you know, of control points, and whether it's, you know, preparing for seasonal fires and firefights, you know, flood implications, and certainly, you know, water distribution. So I'm just curious how this gets disseminated beyond, you know, the report you make and the scientific community to those that from a practical standpoint need to consider this information too.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Chairman Natale. I could speak a little bit to that. This paper was published in one of the higher impact journals within the field of earth sciences. And so it was accompanied by a press release, which was widely distributed. I believe it was reported on by Maven, and also had newspaper appearances as well. So this information is getting out there. I am confident that that scientists within our partner agencies in California have seen this work. And I know this will become an important part of the scientific basis of the ongoing push for adaptive reservoir operation. So, you know, that's a really general answer to your question.
Right. Okay. But it is out there. And again, I think it's important because, you know, again, it's one piece of information.
Yeah, I did read a few really informative press releases that were written in association with the release of this article. And so the authors are certainly trying to reach a wide range of people. And actually, one of my colleagues at Berkeley in the Department of Geography was one of the co-authors on this paper. He was the host of Yelena when she was a visiting scholar here. And he was reaching out personally to a number of people that he believed would spread this information.
Well, Thank you for sharing it. And I would just note, too, that the by the numbers, I again, that's a snapshot in time. And it's, you know, certain data points and information regarding, in this case, this month ties in nicely what you were just talking about with regarding.
Yeah, I'll say a few more things about those numbers at the end of my report.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. But I want to thank you for that. Again, I find that very interesting. So. Thanks.
Yeah, and, thank you, ma'am. And thanks are really due to Byron Riggins, the state policy fellow who prepares those reports every month.
Okay, good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Laurel.
Hi, this is Daniel. I'm wondering, does this study also have implications for any potential conveyance projects? In that, does it mean that there will be less flow available to sustain a conveyance project?
So, you know, there are several layers of complexity in the answer to that question. You know, one is that the flow or the precipitation that would feed flows into the delta is going to be falling in a more concentrated period of time, which underscores the need for storage capacity to capture those flows. The other thing that's happening here is that these flows are also coinciding with warmer temperatures. These altered patterns of precipitation are also coinciding with warmer temperatures. And so one of the other things that has already been happening is that these precipitation totals are becoming increasingly skewed more towards rain and away from snow, which exacerbates the storage challenge. Our storage system in California was built largely on an understanding that snowpack would be doing a lot of the storage for us. And when that's no longer the case, it taxes our system of reservoirs. And so, you know, there are certainly implications for this sharper precipitation season, for flows that make it into the delta that, have to pass through the filters of our reservoirs. So it's difficult to say how exactly those flows are going to be impacted without more comprehensive modeling, but there will be an impact. Does that address your question?
It does, yeah. And is more comprehensive modeling in the offing, you know, is that something we can look forward to?
I believe so. I don't know the specifics, but I could look into those answers for you. But this is something that many state agencies are concerned with. And I do know that there are modeling efforts underway to try to anticipate these changes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And so this is something that really underscores the importance of looking beyond the boundaries of the legal delta and considering the delta as a system that links to the uppermost reaches of our watershed down to the San Francisco estuary. So I really think that we continually need to be aware of these connections and thinking about delta science and how it relates to management needs. Are there any other questions before I move on? Okay, so I'm going to, was there one from Daniel Zingali?
That was my only question, thank you.
Okay, sorry, you're popping up again in my Zoom feed, so I thought maybe there was something else. So I'll move on to report on some of our ongoing and upcoming activities within the Delta Science Program. And one of the things I started alluding to at the end of this article spotlight was the importance of funding research that is relevant to these rapidly changing environmental conditions. And a primary mechanism through which we do that is through our proposal solicitation process held biannually. The current Delta Science proposal solicitation is jointly supported by the Council, the Council's Delta Science Program, and also the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. And we're running this proposal solicitation in partnership with the California Sea Grant. So that proposal solicitation, just as a reminder, closed on February 12th. And the Council did receive 99 proposals for research responsive to the 2017 to 2021 Science Action Agenda, which is a doubling over the amount of proposals that we received during the last call. We anticipate that the total award amount will be up to $9 million, which includes $5.5 million from the council and up to $3.5 million from the Bureau of Reclamation. I'm happy to report that those proposals are now in the process of being evaluated by independent subject matter experts, both ad hoc reviewers, and then they'll be discussed in a panel of reviewers in upcoming months. We anticipate a public announcement of the awarded projects in June 2021, and we will report on those awarded projects to the council at that time. So another recent activity that I'm excited to report out on is the steelhead trout workshop. So this is the monitoring steelhead populations in the San Joaquin Basin workshop, which was held virtually on February 17th through 19th. And at this workshop, the participants were able to review the management challenges and monitoring framework for San Joaquin Basin steelhead. And this workshop was held in response to and supported by the biological opinion on the long-term operation of the Central Valley Project and State Water Project, which calls for the development of a plan to monitor steelhead populations within the San Joaquin Basin and or San Joaquin River, downstream of the confluence with the Stanislaus River. And this includes steelhead and rainbow trout on non-project San Joaquin tributaries as well. So at this workshop, there were a number of breakout sessions that explored issues such as how steelhead populations have been monitored within the Central Valley and what lessons learned can we leverage for the San Joaquin Basin. The breakout sessions also identified relevant stakeholder groups and the top monitoring priorities, as well as what some of the information needs are given those priorities. The breakout sessions also discussed current monitoring efforts that are already underway and existing programs that could be modified to meet these needs, and they charted a potential path forward. So then on the final day, the breakout sessions explored a balanced sampling framework would look like that accounts for extensive geographic heterogeneity and the different life stages that the project would need to encompass. And participants in the breakout sessions concluded that this really is a complicated management and resource challenge, but with broad stakeholder interests. Although the current monitoring framework that's already in place is sophisticated, there are still many opportunities to better align, coordinate across different efforts, and create consistency. We anticipate great things from this workshop. The next steps include scoping a potential manuscript, reconvening some of the agency members that have assisted with the long-term operations non-flow action steelhead charter, and then moving towards drafting a San Joaquin Basin monitoring plan. So stay tuned as those products are developed and come out. And then the final thing I'd like to report on as a major item that should be on your radar is the 11th Biennial Bay Delta Science Conference, which is going to be held virtually on April 6th through 9th. Again, this conference is jointly sponsored by the Council and the U.S. Geological Survey. It's also being held concurrently with the IEP workshop. And this represents a great forum for sharing scientific information that's relevant to managing the San Francisco Bay, San Joaquin, and Sacramento San Joaquin Delta systems. This year, the conference's theme is Building Resilience Through Diversity in Science. And I want to emphasize the importance of registering for the conference if you haven't already. You can access the registration link for the conference on the Delta Stewardship Council's website, and there's also a link in your packet. And when you click on that registration link and go to register, you'll see a button at the top that has a link to the detailed schedule of events that will occur during the 3 days of this meeting. So even if you've registered already, go back and click on that link to access the full schedule. And you can also expect to receive some communication soon if you haven't already. Just yesterday, I communicated with Cindy Whitlock about curating a list of sessions that would be of particular interest to council members. And so I provided some suggestions, and you should see those in your inbox soon. But I'm really excited to see the breadth of topics that will be covered. And there's certainly a lot of relevance to everything that we manage within the Delta Stewardship Council. So don't forget to register. And again, that registration is free. And then finally, well, on the topic of building diversity in science, I wanted to mention that I'm launching a new initiative that's going to be announced at the Bay Delta Science Conference. I'm going to be launching a series of Delta Lead Scientist office hours starting on April 15th, just shortly after the conference. These office hours are going to be consistently held on the third Thursday of each month, and they'll be targeted broadly at the scientific community and really designed to facilitate new connections between the Delta Science Program and any interested party. The office hours are going to take the format of a live Ask Me Anything forum, and the platform for the office hours is going to be Instagram Live, which allows participants to type questions that will then be answered live and broadcasted. So although any types of questions are welcome at the office hours, I will be suggesting different themes for each office hour that's held. The theme of the first is going to build directly on that of the Bay Delta Science Conference, building resilience through diversity in science. And this might be a good opportunity for new investigators who are interested in breaking into the Delta science scene to ask questions about how to get up to speed and how to get started, how to start making connections within this community, how to get funding. And you know, there will certainly be great opportunities for anyone else to ask about what we're doing to broaden participation in Delta science in general, or create those connections between science and action within specific communities of stakeholders. Future themes of the office hours are going to focus on how we fund Delta science and Delta science fellows. We'll spotlight funded projects and specific Delta science fellows. We'll discuss the upcoming launch of the Science Tracker tool, talk about lessons learned from leading science workshops. And some of these office hours targeted at younger audiences will provide opportunities to meet a real Delta scientist. The archives of this series of office hours will be made publicly available and will serve as a sort of Delta science FAQ. So stay tuned to the listserv and to my opening plenary at the Bay Delta Science Conference for specific details on how to tune in to the April 15th office hours. And please pass the information along to everyone who you think might be interested. So finally, just to return to the by the numbers reporting, and again, you have a very detailed handout of this in your packet. I reported earlier that the precipitation received to date in this water year in the northern and central Sierra was about half of the average amount. So what does this mean for reservoir storage, stream flows, and exports? Well, currently water storage in the Shasta, Oroville, and San Luis reservoirs ranges from 53 to 66% of average for this time of year, so similar to where we're at for precipitation. But Sacramento and San Joaquin River flows are at just 27% and 15% of normal. Combined exports to the Central Valley Project and State Water Project are also low at about 22% of the 20-year flow average. So again, reference your packet for additional details, including details about temperature and salinity. So that concludes my report, and I would take any additional questions, and thank you all for your attention today.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, Maria.
Thank you for the report, first of all. It was very good. I have, I first wanted to really commend you on creating this office time. It's really, I really think that for the longest time we were like, okay, how much of all our findings being communicated? And chances are it was, but this is another great way of communicating. So it's wonderful. I'm very encouraged about it.
I just want to also give credit to our communications division, to Brittany Young and Geneva Hutchison, because their work behind the scenes has really been instrumental in helping to make this loosely scattered idea a reality.
Sure. It's a great, great idea.
Great council staff.
My second question was on steelhead
And, you know, over time, we heard different things about them, what percent of them are native and what percent are introduced later and what good and bad they have done. And so I just wanted to get this clarification that are they still being introduced? First, are all of them, species that were not there? And are they being introduced more? Because somehow in my mind from the previous reports is that they're such a threat to everything else, including salmon. And I want to just clear my mind that it is or it's not, because this information over time, you know, I have accumulated, and I want to, now that we have a chance, I'd like to clear it.
So steelhead trout coexist with salmon on many tributaries, and they are native to the system. The anadromous steelhead, those that migrate to and from the ocean, are native. It's my background is not fish ecology, but it's my understanding in working with many fish ecologists that the native anadromous steelhead trout are not a threat to salmon. However, the rainbow trout, I believe, have been introduced. I believe that hatchery operations are involved in the management of the native steelhead trout, and are. In some ways critical to the conservation of native steelhead trout. I don't know the extent to which rainbow trout are still being introduced into the system, but I could certainly look into that and get back to you.
Okay, and then one more. How about the steelhead bass? Was that an issue that was, it's again, non-native species introduced, and how about that?
So I really want to consult my fish.
Sure. Okay.
Colleagues in addressing these questions. The bass are a different issue. They're a different management concern altogether.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. And that would be striped bass.
Striped bass.
Mm. Hey, this is Daniel. I just want to second Maria's props to you and the communications team for the idea and the execution of the idea for the science office hours. I think that's just exactly the kind of thing we need to get more robust engagement in these complex issues in this difficult time we're in. So thank you so much for moving forward on that, conceiving of that, and then making it happen.
You're welcome. And thanks to all of you in advance in helping spread the word once it does get distributed on the listserv. Mm-hmm.
Well, if there are no other comments or questions, I too want to chime in and say I'm excited to listen in on your office hours, Dr. Larson. This is a great idea.
Thanks, Susan.
Is there any public comment on this item?
Yes, I believe we have one. I believe Dr. Williams would like to say something. Like that.
Okay.
Let me unmute him. Thank you, Dr. Williams. Do you have a comment on this item? You might have to unmute yourself. Looks like you're still muted. Oh, there we go.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Tom Williams, Sierra Club Water Committee, but also I did my PhD at Berkeley, and have you ever seen the oyster beds at Benicia? So the times are changing. About 10 years ago, we came up with a concept of snow drought. And precipitation is not what we need so much as we need a lot more snow, and we're not getting it. Part of your issue is that you don't have an ocean connection. We've already have great white sharks going north of San Francisco. We have kelp beds that are in tatters because of warming of the ocean. The upwelling has basically stopped. And we're having a lot more problems. And last summer, 100 degrees in Siberia. So we're losing the whole mechanism of getting rainfall to especially Southern California. That's why DWR wants to go up to Shasta and get water there. So we're having issues. First off, for science, I need to see the data. And when you say norm, I look at standard deviations rather than norms. And I'm quite concerned regarding the development of significant third, fourth, fifth, and maybe even sixth standard deviations in rainfall, precipitation, temperatures, and such. So we're looking at, it's already occurring. And there was a guy from Berkeley Labs that came down maybe 15 years ago, and we basically had a conversation afterwards that it's too late. And that might say a lot of people don't like the word global warming. Now it's climate change, but where can we get the precipitation, snowfall, rainfall, and the base data so that we can look at the changes of standard deviation 4, 5, and 6. So that's basics for what you presented. We're also looking at seismicity in the Delta, and we're also looking for the litter results from Delta subsidence. So we got a reference to some litter findings for the Delta, but then they said the Excel spreadsheets are available someplace else. So we'd like to see from the science point of view as to where are the litter data for the Delta, and can I get standard deviations, the database for doing standard deviations versus norms. There ain't no norms anymore, and I usually summarize it as saying it's only weather forecasts, not climate anymore. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Williams, for that comment. And just to reply to a few of the things that you rose, or a few of the questions that you raised. The data, the precipitation data that formed the basis of the analysis that I reported on earlier today are publicly available. If you go onto the council's website and download the lead scientist report for this month, you can see the exact citation for this article. And within that article, at the end, just before the references, there's a link to the data sources. And so these are long-term precipitation records at a daily time scale that are available for throughout the state of California that date back to the 1960s. And so that would apply a great basis for calculating standard deviations and looking at variability and uncertainty within that data set. I would also point you to the recently published Delta Adapt Vulnerability Assessment for looking at the overlapping issues of sea level rise and delta subsidence. They've done some really great spatial analyses within that document, and there are likewise links to the models and the data that went into that analysis. I hope that helps address your question.
Thank you.
Any other public comments?
There are no other public comments.
Okay, in that case, thank you very much, Dr. Larson. Excellent report.
Thank you, Chair Tatayan.
So are we ready to move on to the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan update?
I think so. I see all three presenters on, so let me move them over really quick.
Okay.
Okay, I think they're all on.
I think Jessica Pearson, our executive officer, was going to introduce this item.
Actually, I'm going to hand it right over to Aaron Mullen from our planning staff.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Good morning. Can you everybody hear me?
Yes. Okay. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I'll go ahead and introduce myself. I am Aaron Mullen. I am a senior engineer with the council, and my focus is Chapter 7 of the Delta Plan and risk management issues. I'm excited to introduce the next presenters who will be providing an update on the 2022 Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. Fun fact about me, I was on the Department of Water Resources planning team for the very first flood plan, which was published in 2012. I actually worked with one of today's presenters on that effort, Mary Jimenez, who I'll formally introduce in a minute. It was while I worked on that project that I developed my interest in the Delta. The interest stemmed from the fact that all upstream decisions that are made about flood management in the Central Valley would eventually flow downstream to the Delta. The Delta is the last link in the flood management chain. The Central Valley and the Delta are linked, and it's this connection that makes coordination between the Delta Plan and the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan so important. The Council received its last flood plan update in July of 2020. I would like to actually point out that there is an error in the staff report. It says that they presented in August. It was actually July. The department and the flood board are returning today to update the council on the plan, on the development of the 22 flood plan update, and touch on where they are at with their Delta Plan consistency determination. There's been a lot of progress on key components that feed into the flood plan. This includes coordination with the regional flood management plans. Two of these, Lower Sacramento Delta North and Lower San Joaquin Delta South, overlap with Delta Plan Authority. The planning team has also made progress with their work on the conservation strategy update and with their technical analysis. Additionally, the 2022 flood plan update admin draft is currently being prepared, and they anticipate it will be released in August. Here today to tell you more about this is my old colleague, Mary Jimenez, chief of the System-Wide Multi-Benefit Initiative Branch for the Department of Water Resources, and Ruth Darling, Program Manager for the Central Valley Flood Protection Board. And with that, I will turn it over to Mary. Thank you.
Mary, did you want me to get started?
Sure, that would be fine. Thank you. And thank you, Aaron.
Yes, thank you, Aaron, for the introduction. As Aaron said, my name is Ruth Darling. I'm a program manager for the Central Valley Flood Protection Board. I'm also lead for the board on ushering the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan through adoption. Also coordinating heavily with the Department of Water Resources planning team, the conservation strategy team, as well as all the other technical aspects that go into the development of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. Next slide, please. So today, Mary and I are going to provide a brief overview of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan update. We will touch on the regional flood management planning and conservation strategy updates, as well as the 2022 update Delta Plan consistency determination. And we will also provide a glimpse into the future of the next 2021 as well as 2022 when the board plans on adopting the 2022 update. Next slide, please. So I will just provide a brief overview, similar to what was said in July of 2020, but for those that are new to the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, this will help provide an outline of the high-level key points of the plan and the intent. Next slide, please. So the Central Valley Flood Protection Act of 2008 directed the Department of Water Resources to develop the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, considering the state plan of flood control and its facilities. It also directed the Central Valley Flood Protection Board to adopt the plan. The first adoption was in 2012. The plan is required to be updated every 5 years in years ending in 2 and 7, with subsequent adoption by the board in those years as well. The plan is a strategic long-range plan that describes a programmatic vision for flood system improvements within the state plan of flood control. The Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is descriptive, it's non-decisional, and it's not a funding or permitting decision for specific projects. Next slide, please. So the primary goal of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is to improve flood risk management. So we want to reduce the chance of flooding and damages once flooding occurs, improve public safety, preparedness, and emergency response. The Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, it looks at the system as a whole. So we call it the system-wide investment approach. And the supporting goals of the plan are to improve operation and maintenance of SPFC facility, again, that state plan of flood control facilities, to promote ecosystem functions within the regions that the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan covers, to improve institutional support within our sister agencies, our stakeholders, as well as the public, and also to promote multi-benefit projects. Next slide, please. So the 2022 update covers three major themes that I will discuss in the next three slides, climate change resilience being one of the themes. So the 2022 update will build upon analysis done in 2012 and 2017. So we will be informed by new data and use comprehensive risk management approach to increase climate resilience and provide multiple benefits. As you might be aware, the DWR, the Central Valley Flood Protection Board, and the Delta Stewardship Council have been coordinating over the last year, I'd say, less than a year, on the Delta Adapts climate analysis. So there were several meetings that occurred between our three agencies on in general on coordination of that analysis. And with the release of the Delta Adapts document, it was stated between those folks that were coordinating on that effort that everything ended up satisfactory. We were all really in the same boat on the outcomes of the Delta Adapts analysis, as well as the consistency between that and what will the climate change analysis that's occurring for the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan update. So I did want to highlight on the three themes for the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan are planned in future engagements, and encourage any of those that are willing and interested to attend the public outreach and engagement activities that we have. So in the summer of this year, 2021, we will be holding stakeholder meetings on the climate change analysis. And in the fall of 2021, we will be holding a coordinating committee and or a Central Valley Flood Protection Board workshops, specifically focusing on the climate change analysis. So those will be showcased on the board's website with agendas and links to those meetings. So feel free to keep an eye out for that. Next slide, please. Another theme for the 2022 update is tracking accomplishments and performance. So a lot of the projects and planning that have come out of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan are funded through bond measures. And so it's important to be accountable to the taxpayers and provide solid feedback on what we've accomplished and what we're tracking for our performance measures. So the goal is to develop a comprehensive performance tracking system that will improve return on investment for state taxpayers and provide accountability for our planning and project implementation. And the state has ongoing efforts to develop a performance tracking system to track the progress on implementing the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. That includes flood risk management and ecosystem restoration metrics. And Mary will touch on that piece a little bit more when she discusses the conservation strategy piece later in the presentation. So for future engagements on the performance tracking and accomplishments, we'll be going to the Central Valley Flood Protection Board Coordinating Committee in the spring of 2021. And there will also be a workshop this summer on this topic as well. Next slide, please. And the third theme for the 2022 update is our alignment with other state efforts. So it's really important that the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is consistent with the goals and the priorities of the state administration, as well as other agencies that operate and plan and implement projects within the Central Valley. So first, we have Governor Newsom's water resilience portfolio. There's several actions that were outlined in the portfolio that address the plan. And recommendations within the plan, including the Yolo Bypass Cash Slough partnership and streamlining permitting. So there's about three or four actions that were detailed in the water resilience portfolio that we're tracking and providing consistency with. In addition, consistency with the California Water Plan update that occurs in 2023, the Delta Plan, as well as consistency with the SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, the DWR Climate Action Plan, and the Headwaters to Floodplains Initiative, that's H2F. That's a flood safety partnership that is being spearheaded by DWR, as well as the Eco Restore Initiative. And so future engagements that will detail alignment with other state efforts will occur in the spring 21 at a coordinating committee presentation. And actually, this one already happened. That one happened last month. So we have, let me know if you would like to have any information on the due out of that coordinating committee presentation, and I can gather that for you. And in addition, we have ongoing regional flood management plan and the GSA coordination, the Groundwater Sustainability Agency coordination. Next slide, please. Oh, thank you. This is the right one. So we just wanted to touch on our timeline for the rest of 2021 as well as 2022. So with our development milestones, this Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, that top column, we expect the admin draft to be out in August of this year, and the public draft to be released in the first quarter of 2022, and we're hoping for a final Central Valley Flood Protection Plan update in the fall of 2022 with a subsequent adoption by the board. The conservation strategy, so the DWR planning team is currently working on the DWR conservation strategy team is currently working on the initial working draft that was received in January. And the revised working admin draft is occurring today and we're hoping to have the conservation strategy public draft released in November of 2021 with a final to accompany the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan in September of 2022. And for the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan CEQA document, we hope to have a draft CEQA document in January of 2022 and final within, again, the same time frame, September of 2022. And in addition, the DWR planning team will be presenting tomorrow at the Central Valley Flood Protection Board meeting. And the CEQA document topic will be addressed. So if anyone's interested, you can join the board meeting tomorrow. The link's on our website, and you can hear DWR's CEQA update. And next slide, please. And I'll turn it over to Mary to cover the RFMPs and conservation strategy update.
Thank you very much, Ruth. Good morning, council members. This is Mary Jimenez with DWR. Thank you very much for having us this morning. So now I'll dig into a little bit more detail on where we're at, on the, specifically on the regional flood management planning and conservation strategy components of the flood plan. Next slide, please. So I think as Ruth, one slide back, please. Thank you. I think as Ruth alluded to earlier, DWR has funded updates to the 6 regional plans included in our broader planning area, 2 of which have portions of their plans that intersect part of the Delta. The regional flood management planning groups are not completing comprehensive updates of their previous plans for this update, but instead are developing a series of white papers with updated content that is informing the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan's investment and policy recommendations. Next slide, please. So the regional flood management planning efforts supporting this update kicked off September of last year, and we have been meeting with them monthly and making really good progress on their various deliverables. So the deliverables include white papers with updated proposed project information and their thoughts on progress that's been made on the policy recommendations that were made in the 2017 Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. And there have also been periodic regionally led presentations to the board's coordinating committee by the leaders of each of the 6 regions that have been very interesting and engaging conversations. Next slide, please. So just yesterday, leaders from 5 of the 6 regions presented regional update summaries to the board's coordinating committee, including the 2 regions that overlap with part of the Delta. The 6th presentation, because we ran out of time, will be completed next month in April from the Mid and Upper Sacramento River region. It was extremely informative for us and everyone engaged in the coordinating committee to hear the different regional perspectives on implementation progress that's been made in each region, and how their priorities are changing over time moving towards 2022. So with that, we can actively continue to work together over the coming months to well reflect their valuable input into the draft CVFPP as we move forward this year. So over the next couple months, we will be digging into a list of proposed projects that's coming into us from the regions in order to inform our updated estimates of needed investments and get more into our performance tracking theme with them, including discussion and review of performance tracking indicators and metrics. And as Ruth mentioned, really focused in on the flood risk reduction and ecosystem metrics of the CVFPP. Next slide, please. So the conservation strategy update, the conservation strategy is being updated, as we mentioned, as a key supporting document to the CVFPP, but also as an integral part of the CVFPP main document. So as such, its themes and information well align with those of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan as a whole that Ruth covered at a higher level just prior to me speaking. Next slide, please. So there were measurable objectives set for an array of conservation metrics in 5 conservation planning areas in 2016 to guide multi-benefit project formulation and implementation for the CVFPP. Our team is currently digging into available project information to estimate contributions to these objectives so that we can have an informed update to the conservation strategy and CVFPP and really assess how we're doing and where the challenges still are. The primary venue we are engaging in the details on this topic and others related to the conservation strategy is the board's advisory committee that meets monthly. They just had a very engaging meeting yesterday, and we look forward to continued conversations in that venue as well as I'll call it kind of extended venues and meetings with smaller groups and individuals outside of the advisory committee to dig into these topics. Next slide, please. So zooming in a little bit more on the schedule that Ruth showed earlier, a development of the conservation strategy update is well underway. We're considering draft recommendations that we received from the board's advisory committee originally in November of 2020, and then they were updated in early 2021. So we're going through those recommendations now to inform the update of the conservation strategy and the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan itself, as some of those recommendations are applicable. The team is working on an administrative draft that we look forward to sharing for early review by actively engaged stakeholders and agency partners. As Ruth mentioned, we're targeting May. We will use the feedback received on that administrative draft and continued discussions through the advisory committee and other venues and meetings to work towards the public draft later this year, as Ruth mentioned, shortly before the release of the public draft of the CVFPP itself. The next slide, please. And the next slide. So I really wanted to take time again to thank Aaron Mullen and multiple folks on the Delta Stewardship Council staff for very helpful regular discussions with my team at DWR and Ruth and her folks from the Central Valley Flood Protection Board. And thanks to those really informative early discussions, we feel like we're making good progress on our Delta Plan consistency determination. We participated together in 6 early consultation meetings throughout 2020, where the Stewardship Council staff provided very helpful overviews of all the Delta Plan chapters. And we had engaging dialogue on how each of the policies could apply to our Central Valley Flood Protection Plan update and really started talking through what is the best way to address those policies. And so looking forward to the next steps, we look forward to continuing on focusing on our alignment throughout continued development of our flood plan update. And we look forward to providing continued future briefings to the council as needed. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So building off of that and the continued collaboration between DWR, the Central Valley Flood Protection Board, and the Delta Stewardship Council, we're looking forward to continuing to leverage the collaboration that we've built on and we're building on so far as we continue progress in preparing our plan update, continuing through the Memorandum of Understanding working group that's been established, continued discussions at the staff level on our climate change analyses. So I think as Ruth alluded to earlier, we're hoping to have some draft results on the CVFPP analyses a little bit later this year. And so as those results are ready and primed for discussion, get back together at the staff level and go through those and have good, robust discussions on them is on tap this year as well. We also look forward to continuing to meet as we develop the contents of our consistency determination and leverage the valuable input and expertise of your staff and continue engaging together at the board's valuable forums that we mentioned, the advisory committee, the coordinated committee, the board's workshops, and other meetings as well as needed. And then just reiterate one more time, you know, Ruth and I can look forward to coming back to the council in the future to provide you future updates and briefings and answer any questions or concerns you might have. So I can pause now for questions or comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Ruth and Mary. Council members, are there any questions? Okay, hearing no questions, is there any public comment on this item?
Yes, there is one public comment. One second. It is from Dr. Williams. And Dr. Williams, you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Thank you. Dr. Tom Williams, Sierra Club Water Committee. Central issue for us is the flood flows. And we're quite concerned regarding the flood flows and who gets them. And by definition, flood has serious implications as to what are your water rights. Are there going to be any water rights issues with flood water? and specifically as the Delta Tunnel reports have indicated, they will take only flood flows and get 6,000 cubic feet per second at the end of the Sacramento River. So it's quite concerning regarding how the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan deals with the diversion of 6,000 cubic feet per second from the lower Sacramento River. And I say other rivers also, because as we've heard today, there's going to be more flooding and less snowpack. So one of the considerations for your report should be who's going to get the flood flows, or who has rights to taking flood flows in the Central Valley. That's all.
I can take a stab at that one if I think I understand the question.
Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Okay.
I know that water rights is not within the jurisdiction of the Central Valley Flood Protection Board, so
that's correct.
No need to address the water rights aspect.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and water rights is not a particular focus of the flood plan either.
Okay. Well, if there are no council member questions and no other public comment, I'll confirm, Brandon, no other public comment?
Yes, no other public comment.
So I wanted to express my gratitude and commend you, Mary and Ruth, and the Flood Protection Board. An unbelievably already 10 years since the first Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. And the council is 10 years old. And through our 10 years together, we've had some growing pains. But we are at a point now where I am just really admiring how the MOU working group and your staff and council staff and DWR staff are being very solution oriented. And this demonstrates that sister agencies can, in fact, work together and share each other's public meetings and receive public input. And it's just been so productive. And I really appreciate all your efforts. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us today. We look forward to coming back when you're ready for us.
Okay.
Yes, well, thank you. Much appreciated.
On to agenda item 11, Recreation and Tourism Chapter of the 2020 Update to the Delta Protection Commission's Economic Sustainability Plan. And Jessica Pearson will give us context and background.
Thank you so much. I'm going to turn it over to our Planning Deputy, Jeff Henderson, to kick this off.
Sorry, stuck on mute there. Good morning, council members. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you, Jessica. The 2009 amendments to the Delta Protection Act required that the Delta Protection Commission prepare what's known as an Economic Sustainability Plan, or an ESP, for the Delta region. The ESP was originally published in January of 2012, and it includes information and recommendations on a wide range of topics spanning Delta agriculture, recreation and tourism, public safety, levees, and potential conveyance and restoration impacts. That 2012 ESP then in turn informed development of the council's Chapter 5 Delta as Place policies in the Delta Plan with respect to the socioeconomic sustainability of the Delta, which is required by Public Resources Code Section 29759. Since 2012, several developments have impacted or may impact recreation and tourism in the Delta. And these include things such as the designation of the Delta as a National Heritage Area, continued work on the Great Delta Trail, creation of a marketing task force, the proposed Delta Conveyance project and prior iterations of that project, and most recently, the COVID-19 pandemic. The ESP update identifies that the council is a potential partner in implementing that plan's recommendations. It's also worth noting that once the amendment is completed by the commission is required to transmit the amendment to the council within 60 days, and then within 180 days of the amendment, the council reviews the ESP amendment for consistency with the Delta plan. I'm pleased to introduce Eric Vink, the Executive Director of the Delta Protection Commission, who will provide today's update to the council on the Recreation and Tourism chapter of the Economic Sustainability Plan and discuss ways the council can be a collaborative partner in its implementation. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And council members, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you a little bit today about our update of the Recreation and Tourism chapter of the Economic Sustainability Plan. And Jeff, that was a great outline of the ESP. I will note that on that five-year review schedule, we did initiate a review of the agricultural chapter of the Economic Sustainability Plan in 2018. I have presented to the council previously with some of the highlights from that work. And then we initiated the work on the Recreation and Tourism chapter in 2019. Really in order of importance to the Delta economy, agriculture is the predominant force in the Delta economy, but recreation and tourism is the number two contributor. So if, Brandon, if you could advance to the next slide, please. And maybe as introduction to this, the real purpose of the Economic Sustainability Plan is how best to protect and enhance the unique Delta values, that is cultural, agricultural, recreational, and natural resource. And of course, council members, you're aware of the co-equal goals. We always remind people that the co-equal goals are to be accomplished in a manner that does protect and enhance unique Delta values. And so that's the baseline or the foundation for the work on the Economic Sustainability Plan. And the question we asked ourselves when we initiated this Recreation and Tourism chapter update was, how do we achieve a sustainable, thriving Delta recreation and tourism economy? And so some of the key data, and this slide by now you probably had a chance to digest it all. This is just some areas where we're actually moving in the right direction in the Delta recreation and tourism economy. And largely that's around agritourism, specifically sales directly from farms or winery related, and largely it's winery related. We certainly had a large increase in wineries and wine related economy in the Delta region. And then statewide hunting licenses have increased, and that trend's followed in the Delta as well. If you can move on, Brandon. And we also, unfortunately, have areas of the Delta recreation and tourism economy that are not doing so well. And we've documented a decrease in Delta marinas from 2008. That was the data we utilized in our 2012 Economic Sustainability Plan, present or the near present. And at the same time, a decrease in recreation-related establishments as well. Boat building is down by a pretty healthy percent. There were not a lot of boat builders in the Delta, but that's significant because that's a high value economic contributor to the Delta recreation economy. And I'll review the numbers, the actual dollar numbers in a bit, which is indicative of why losing the heavier contributors has such a dramatic effect on the Delta recreation economy. Next one, please, Brandon. And this just shows the declining boat ownership in what we call the Delta market area, which is not just the boundaries of the Delta, but nearby areas as well. Those would be people who primarily would do their recreational boating in the Delta region. And this just shows a increase to 2000 and then a decrease beginning in 2010 that continues to this day. This might say something about shifting demographics and the general movement away from recreational boating. We've certainly seen increase in other types of other forms of recreation, whether that's non-motorized boating, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, et cetera, or just, bird watching, general nature-based recreation has increased. Next, please, Brandon. And the economics, this is what I was alluding to earlier. The numbers are down in the Delta, a decline of almost 20% from the 2012 report, which means supporting fewer jobs in the Delta region. And again, most of that spending occurs in legacy communities and at marinas. So with a reduction in marinas, with some challenging circumstances in the legacy communities, one would anticipate seeing these type of declines. Next, please, Brandon. Even as the Delta market area population has increased since 2012, and again, since it loops in large metropolitan areas at the periphery, it's been a pretty substantial increase in population in the market area. But the report determined that the recreation visitation in the Delta is the same as it was in 2012, about 12 million visitors per year, visit days per year, a person visiting the Delta in a day. That doesn't mean 12 million unique individuals, but people with multiple visits for recreational purposes in the Delta. But all added up, 12 million, that number's flat from 2012. So we did have some indication, it's anecdotal, that there was pandemic-related boating increases in the Delta in 2020. Reports that boat sales had increased, that marinas had seen increased traffic in the last year since the pandemic. It's an interesting question whether that will continue or whether that's more just a feature of, people recreating very close to home during travel restrictions over the last year. Time will tell a little bit more on that. Next, please, Brandon. The recommendations that will follow and that were in our report, and I should add that our commission met last week and they considered the final recreation and tourism chapter update to the economic sustainability plan. They did approve that report. So we will be transmitting that officially to the Stewardship Council. But the report included a series of recommendations. This is what we largely focused our discussion with our commission on at the meeting last week. And those recommendations largely revolve around Delta marinas, Delta boating still is kind of the cornerstone recreation activity in the Delta, and then the legacy community related businesses. Next, please. And some of the recommendations, and in a moment I'll get to what we intend to do with these recommendations and how that will hopefully loop in the Delta Stewardship Council as well. But some of these recommendations include partnerships that can expand access to existing public recreation facilities or existing public lands. That was a point that the council raised in their comment letter to us on this topic. The Delta Dredge Sediment Long-Term Management Plan is a effort that was initiated with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers back in CalFed days, I believe. This even preceded the establishment of the Delta Stewardship Council, but involved your predecessor agency. And whether that effort is resumed or whether there is some other effort, and the Delta Water Master has been leading an effort focused in the South Delta on addressing channel sedimentation. And they've had substantial sedimentation channel clogging issues from sediment accumulating in the South Delta. But this is an issue that is experienced throughout the Delta region, and it does become a challenge to the recreational boating community at some point. So that's something that we are recommending to resume, whether it's through the auspices of the CORE project or through some other type of effort. Planning and permitting assistance for small businesses in the legacy communities is an identified topic. That's something that could largely have a local agency focus, although not solely local agencies. And then continuing other recommended actions. Next slide, please, Brandon. Removing water hazards and abandoned vessels. That is always a critically important issue in the Delta region. Save the Waters You Love is a campaign that's now focused in the Bay, but to bring that campaign to the Delta. And as the name indicates, it's really just a public awareness focused effort on getting people thinking about issues of challenge in the waterways and related to boating recreation. And then we did hear a lot about law enforcement funding and presence throughout the Delta, primarily the vast rural reaches of the Delta where most of this boating recreation occurs. And then next slide, the final set of proposed recommended actions are Delta Marketing Task Force, which is a joint effort of the Commission and the Delta Conservancy. And related to that marketing task force is the visitor website, visitcadelta.com. So expanding the efforts to promote the Delta through those two efforts. As Jeff alluded to in his introduction, the National Heritage Area, our new designation, and also our ongoing planning for the Great Delta Trail, which has been in statute for many years now, but we're currently preparing the master plan for the Great Delta Trail. So both planning and implementing those projects will be integral to Delta tourism in particular. And then something that council could help with and something we'll be keen to discuss with Dr. Jessica Rudnick, regular Delta recreation and tourism surveys. We're able to update some of this information from 2012. We've been progressing on it in the years since 2012, but we're challenged by our size and resources, and this is something where we could certainly use some help on. Next slide, Brandon, thanks. So the next steps is to convene the potential participants, a work group, at least we'll call it a work group initially, depending on the level of formality that we might need or want to attach to that effort. It might morph into something more formal. But for now, at least, our intention is to convene a work group, certainly with the council's participation, the conservancy, but other state agencies, state parks, particularly their Division of Boating and Waterways, Cal Fish and Wildlife, State Lands Commission, those are all important state agencies. But the local agencies and even the private entities, whether they're chambers of commerce or individual businesses, will be important participants in this effort as well. So we intend to convene them to present the recommendations that we're in, the update to the economic sustainability plan, and to really begin developing a work plan for how to make progress on those efforts. Next slide, Brandon. And that's kind of just what I said here. You know, ultimately, this may call for a more formalized effort between these entities. If it leads in that direction, that's great. Our report talked about the potential for some sort of joint powers authority. But my feeling is the jury is still out on whether that is the right venue. I think we need to get people together and talk about how we can make progress. And if we need to formalize it in that way, we'll likely head in that direction. And I think that's it, unless there's another slide there, Brandon. Yeah, I do want to thank the Dan German Group. They were our lead consultant on this work. And in particular, call out the efforts of our program manager, Virginia Gardner, who led the commission's work on this and would be our lead on this moving forward in convening the other interested agencies. That's it. You can leave this slide up for a little bit in case people want to take down Virginia's contact information. Of course, we can all, we're a small agency. It's easy to reach us. But with that, I will close my comments and would be happy to entertain any questions if there's time.
Council members, any questions for Eric?
Madam Chair, just a comment, if I could, Councilmember Natoli. I wanted to, as current chair of the commission, thank Eric and certainly Virginia and our consultant representatives for their work on the update. And I would just note, as certainly we look at the next steps, that there's some concerning, I don't know if there's much trends as there is certainly the data of impacts to recreation, some of it's market-driven, some of it may be related to economic conditions and such, but I think as we look at the vitality and aspects of day-to-day life and those things that contribute to certainly to the economic sustainability of the Delta, but certainly the things that are attractive from both a human perspective, but that intertwine with the environment and activities that drive everyday life. I know that this is an update and there's some opportunities here, I think, to further refine information as we go along and to the points about ongoing surveys and certainly inquiries as to, what might constitute trends and how we might be able to bolster some of the economic activity, but also, I think, really highlight the important aspects of the Delta, and as it relates certainly to the council's work, but to the commission's work and our partner with the Conservancy and the local communities. And so I just want to thank Eric for his presentation and his leadership and that of Virginia, and thank you, Madam Chair, and the council for hearing the update here today. And, you know, I think embodying all this, and we'll probably hear from our council staff, is opportunities to, I think, further identify ways that we might partner with not to count just the council and the commission, but certainly with other entities, agencies, both public sector and private sector. And hopefully we maintain the optimism around the future of recreation and all the elements that go with recreation in the Delta. Thank you.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Maria.
Yes, this is for Mr. Ving. There was a slide where you talked about drop in the dollars from 320 to 250. And I just wanted to know if this two questions, one is, does this include the construction and agricultural dollars? And that's number one. And then the number two question is, in what period was it mostly attributable to COVID or not? Or if this data is available there here, yeah. From 320 million to 250, decline of from 2012. So I'm trying to see if how much of it is really the last year due to COVID, or and then also want to know if construction and agricultural dollars are included.
Yeah, well, first off, it would have preceded COVID, so it doesn't take into account what we've experienced in the last year.
Okay.
It's just the recreation and tourism economy. So not agriculture.
Not construction.
No, not construction. When I say not agriculture, it can be difficult to tease out, when you're producing grapes and you're also making wine from the grapes and you're operating a winery tasting room, at what point do you move from being agriculture to becoming part of the tourism economy. Mm-hmm. And that's a good question that I'll get an answer to you back on, because I don't know how that gradation was tracked in our study. Clearly, the grape growing part is agriculture. I don't have any question about that. But as you move through the processing of grapes into wine and then operating a tasting room, at what point do we pick up the economic activity of the tasting room? Sure. Is that separate from agriculture? I'm glad you asked your question, because it got me thinking about some of the linkages between agriculture and the information that we're presenting in this study. Sure. Most of that, I think, would be captured on the agriculture side of the ledger. But we certainly have documented additional winery tasting rooms and more of that type of activity, over the course of the update period.
Mm-hmm. And then one more question on in the tourism definition of tourism for us is boating, that wine tasting that you just mentioned. What other line items are there? Ecotourism, maybe, I don't know, or sports tourism?
Yeah, well, certainly fishing, hunting, bird watching, bicycling, using trails, hiking, walking, mm-hmm. even pleasure driving. And we have, plenty of people, especially this time of the year, that are just driving out to the Delta region because it's stunning. It's just incredibly scenic and beautiful. So all of those activities would be considered recreational related activities. And I'm probably forgetting some important ones. So anyone chime in if there's something I didn't mention that you either have a question about or that should be included. But it's a pretty broad definition and certainly does include pleasure driving as well. So
mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very
much. You're welcome. Thanks.
I have a question.
Oh, yes, Christy.
Thank you for the presentation. It's really informative. My question in particular is on the decrease in the number of marinas, and I'm wondering if there are any particular data points that stand out with respect to that. Is it a combination of economic factors and environmental factors? I mean, I know in my own local Southern California area, we've had a few recreational lake areas where, certain docks are no longer available just because of, shoreline receding and that kind of thing. So are there data points that speak to that, or is it some combination of the two?
Yeah, it's a good question. And welcome, Councilmember Smith. Didn't get a chance to welcome you at the last meeting that you joined. I appreciate the question. A lot of this really started leading up to the 2012 report. I think there's, this second bullet point references the 2008 data. And the recession that occurred in 2008, or was it 2007 and 8? But the Great Recession, maybe it was 2008, 2009, really did a number on recreational boating in the Delta. So part of it was a weakened condition. These marinas in particular were suffering from that decline in business, making some of that decline up in the intervening years. But it's also environmental factors as well, because the channel sedimentation makes it very challenging to operate some of these marinas. And we do have marinas that is a big, big issue. As the channels sediment, they foster invasive aquatic weeds. And so water hyacinth in particular has been a very big issue in the recreational boating. It's really an issue for all aspects in the Delta, whether you're operating the export pumps in the South Delta or a farmer trying to siphon water onto your levied island, or a recreational boater or a marina operator. All those entities are challenged by the growth of invasive aquatic weeds, which is a function of channel siltation, water temperatures. There's a host of factors, but those two are critical. So it really is economic. It started with the decline from the last recession, and then there's an environmental overlay to it as well that challenges. And some of these facilities are just not investing in improvements. They perhaps feel that their future is uncertain. I mean, the prospect of the tunnel project has been weighing over people in the Delta. I'm not saying that that's the rationale for everyone's decision-making, but we believe it's true that there are marina operations in the Delta that just, you know, don't know which direction this thing is headed, and that's leading to a decrease in making needed improvements, and then that becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point. So something we would like to look into a little bit further, but it's really a host of factors that's contributing to that decline.
Thank you.
Well, if there are no other council member questions or comments, is there any public comment on this item?
There is no public comment.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Eric. Very informative. And I wish you luck in the National Heritage Area planning process. I'm very excited about that. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it.
Yeah, we are too, and that really should be a great boost to tourism efforts in particular, but perhaps even recreation efforts as well in the Delta region. And we'll look forward to Jeff's Henderson's participation in our Management Plan Advisory Committee.
Okay, on to the next agenda item, which is public comment in general.
We have one public comment. We have Dr. Williams. Just 1 second while I'm on the talk.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Williams, you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Dr. Tom Williams, Sierra Club Water Committee, and a few others. Basic general comments. If you want public comments, provide the public comment period at the beginning of the meetings, not at the end. Hopefully you won't get too much harassment, but it's far better to have public comments at the beginning of a 3-hour meeting rather than at the end. So also provide on the Zoom page a place where chat, either chat room or Q&A boxes, so that we can make comments and have them answered in a more efficient way. Okay, the Sierra Club Water Committee, I got assigned to watching this meeting today. So I was also in Sacramento for the Water Resources Board Sacramento meeting regarding the dual tunnel project. And I think we contributed to that demise. We're still quite interested in any tunnel in the Delta. And a long time ago, I helped defeat the peripheral canal. And I sometimes misquote the tunnel as being the peripheral tunnel. So we're quite interested in the seismicity, which has been used to justify the tunnel, and the surface subsidence. And we're working on a project down here in Los Angeles regarding litter subsidence and its impact, especially given the gas and oil production from the Delta. So I'd highly recommend that we'll be looking at the web page for your group, and we'll be probably recommending that you provide for subscriptions to announcements and notices. So that's pretty much all of my public comments. We'll see you at the next one. Bye-bye.
Okay. Brandon, is there any other public comment?
There is no other public comment.
All right. Well, in that case, I'll say that our next council meeting is scheduled for April 22 and 23. And meeting adjourned. Thank you all for being here today. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.